Welcome to Season 2, Episode 2 of The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. And welcome to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Well, Noam, season's underway. The Revs have won 3 out of 4. They're second place in the East, just 1 point back, 4 points down to the supporter shield. And yet, how do we feel?
In any normal circumstance, I would say, wow, 3-1, no ties. They've had a couple shutouts or 3 shutouts. Pretty good start to the season. Like, they've never won 2 games in a row to start the season. First 4 games in, first time ever. What is there to complain? All is good in Revsland, and perhaps there's even more rumors of a stadium now with Wynn purchasing the property in Everett with the power plant today, maybe a Rev stadium tomorrow. Things are looking up everywhere, but I'm not feeling so good about the Revs, I have to say. And it seems weird to be doing our first in-season podcast of this new year, 2023, and I'm feeling pretty pessimistic about the Revolution.
Really? Why is that?
Well, a couple reasons, mainly. They had a solid game against Houston, but Houston is not top quality opponent. To me, the tell was really LAFC, where the team just got picked apart, where a 4-0 scoreline wasn't even representative of how lopsided the game ended up being. And not just the players, but also the coaching, and we can get to that. But then you also have, just take the game this weekend against Nashville. It was a pretty dull affair for most of it. Many missed chances, poor crosses, poorly taken shots. It was a boring MLS 1.0 game.
It has had a very MLS 1.0 start to the season. You know, unlike the last couple of years where the team came out firing on all cylinders and was moving the ball effectively, even in games where they lost, you know, they were playing attractive, creative soccer, and it was a lot of fun to watch. Now there's this pivot this year to what's been, unintentionally, I'm sure, just a less interesting brand of soccer, but you got to say it's gotten results. They've won 3 out of 4.
They have gotten results, and some things are perhaps a little bit better. Like, their defense does seem stronger, except for the LAFC game. But overall, they've had, 3 shutouts. There's a little bit more calmness in the back, which is interesting. They've also had a couple injuries, you know, throughout the team. But it's interesting that Andrew Farrell isn't out there, and they're still maintaining their poise. So there is some optimism, I should say, on the defensive end of things. But the rest of the team, yes, it's early in the season and they need to get going. But this team has been together for a long time. It's been, 3 years, 4 years? This is the 4th year with Arena. Maybe not the full year, but I think at this point, a team that's been together for this long, yes, Carlos Heel has been injured the last couple of games, hasn't been out there. But you need to see a team that's just more advanced and showing more of an identity. That in the first 4 games, that it's not just getting started. It's not just the preseason. We've seen this before.
I'm going to take the other side of this argument. I share the same feeling that it doesn't look pretty and it isn't going well, but these are games that in past seasons against bad teams early in the season would be ties or losses. And I think it's way too early to use the LAFC game as a measuring stick of where this team can go. Clearly they're in much better form than the Revs are, but I think that Charlotte game easily could have ended 0-0, but they kept pushing to the end and they got a goal. And the Nashville game, you know, another 1-0 win was a total mess, but they got the result. So it's hard to argue with that. At the same time, I think the defense is a little bit better, but they are still getting shredded multiple times every game. And Petrovic has had to be there to bail them out.
Yeah, even in the Nashville game, he had some key saves. And certainly the last 15 minutes, it was a very, very nervy ending to the game. The Revs not able to maintain control and possession. But again, you know, they've been through this cycle many times before as a team. What does it take to figure things out that they can look a little bit more like they're in control of their destiny? And here, I'll go back to LAFC. Perhaps you're right. It's too early in the season. But LAFC was coming off a midweek game in the CONCACAF Champions League. They were missing, I think, four of their starters from their starting lineup. And the Revs actually started the game. They actually were controlling the ball, passing it around, taking it a little bit to LA. But here's the thing for me. Steve Cherundolo was interviewed after the game, and he talked about the start of the game and how things changed. And he said that basically...
So wait, it was 1-0 LA in the 65th minute.
Yeah, 1-0 at halftime and 65th minute. That's correct. But by then, the Revs were really on their back heels, and LAFC just poured it on. And Steve Cherundolo, after the game, said in an interview how the LAFC strategy that they shifted in response to the Revolution press made a few changes and not only addressed the Revolution press, but really turned that whole press dynamic around against the Revolution. And Cherundolo said in the interview, I think it was almost these words, that they didn't have an answer to it. And I just thought that was the highest form of trash talking I've heard. Steve Cherundolo, former player for Bruce Arena, completely outfoxed Bruce Arena on the pitch. And, you know, and that's, I think, to me, is sort of like, here you had a quality team that with, you know, active management, really understanding the flow of the game, what to do, could easily pivot and make the changes needed to eventually just dominate a Revolution team, even when Carlos Gil came on. So I think there's some warning signs in this game. It might be early on, but I thought the Revs got outplayed and they got outcoached.
Well, and you can see that in the game summary, because the Revs made three subs at the 63-minute mark when it was still 1-0. I think still a chance to win the game or get a tie, get something out of it. And LA made three subs in the 65th minute, and then promptly scored in the 67th minute, and then scored again in the 83rd and again in stoppage time. And to Cherundolo's point, never really had to do anything different from that point on. They found a weakness, they exploited it, and there was no response from the Revs.
And why was there no response from the Revolution? You know,
I don't know.
Right. We don't know. And I think this is my concern at this point, you know, under a number of years now with this regime, not being able to make the big game adjustments when needed. Yes, it's an early season game, but it's LAFC, the reigning MLS champions. And we couldn't hold a candle to it, to that team.
Right.
And I think it will be the same. It was sort of like, it's like Groundhog Day. It's like, it's the same thing. Sure, the Revs could be a mid-table team, and, you know, in any other league in the world, it would be exciting because they're, you know, fighting to avoid relegation or to make it into some cup competition, but it's MLS, and, you know, the Revolution could make the playoffs, but what I saw and how they played against LAFC, I just don't see them being competitive when it comes to winning the cup.
But now, you know, potentially they're going to have to do it without Carlos Gil for a while. He came out late in the LA game and sat out for the entirety of the Nashville game. So what did you see differently without him on the field this weekend?
Yeah, I think the Revs struggled to, it's a good question, the Revs struggled to really have continuity and an even presence across the pitch without somebody really orchestrating the midfield. Clearly, Carlos Gil is the soul of the team when it comes to their style of play. And he made a difference immediately when he came out against the Galaxy, when he came onto the game, I should say, against the Galaxy, although then the defensive side just fell apart.
LAFC. But yeah, it's It was interesting. To me, the biggest difference in the Nashville game was that they could not possess the ball at the end of the game. You know, 2 years ago, there were games where they would be up one goal and they could essentially kill out the clock by working the ball around the perimeter, through the middle, out to the wing and back again. And they were defending with 11 guys behind the ball and with ultimately success, but it was a little hairy getting there.
Right, for sure. And in fact, I was thinking at that time, like, there's 11 people behind the ball, but very deep in their own end. Right. They should press a little bit higher. Not that I'm, you know, a skilled tactician at this level of play, but it seemed odd that Nashville had so much room away to move the ball into the attacking half without any trouble.
Right.
And getting back to Carlos Hill, it seems like the injury won't be too bad from what I've heard. Bruce Arena saying that he'll really just be out of the Nashville game and is expected the week after. But at the LAFC game, there was a little bit of a situation when Carlos Hill had to come out towards the end after having subbed in. And it wasn't quite clear if he was upset about having to leave, if he was upset about getting another injury, or if he was angry at the training staff for putting him out there to begin with a knock already, and it just made it worse. So something to keep a little bit of an eye on. There was a little bit of drama coming off the field then.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, I think that these muscle injuries can be very troubling in that it's always one game or two games, and then a month goes by and the guy's not on the field. I feel like we saw this with Gustavo Bow last year, where he was always one game away from coming back and then ended up missing, what was it, 2-3 months? So I'm a little skeptical that Hill will be back right away. I'm excited that they got off to a good start winning a game without him. I wouldn't want to play the whole season without him, but I think it is one of the things that the team did very well a couple of years ago. Because remember that stretch where they won the Supporters' Shield, Hill missed, I think, the entire month of August. So it'd be nice to see if they could pick up that team dynamic again and
right.
It doesn't matter so much when you're missing your best player.
Right. Yeah, and it's an opportunity for other players to step up. The question is, Eric, do you think anyone can take the place at that time of Tejan Buchanan, along with an in-form Gustavo Bow, were able to fill in the gaps a little bit stronger than what we've seen? What do you think? Can the Revs build a presence through the midfield this year without Hill?
I don't think they can do it for the full season, no. But I think that we've seen good things from Noel Buck so far. I think Gustavo Bow can definitely do that to a certain degree. You know, I think once Dylan Barrero settles in, and Matt Polster, you know, on the defensive midfield is another part of that. I think they can do it. It hasn't failed yet this season.
Right, right. Well, another bright spot too. I've complained enough about the team already. It's just four games in. I've been surprised by Bobby Wood. I think he's been a nice presence for the team up top. You know, could be scoring some more goals, I'm sure, from his perspective. He would like to be seeing more there, but I think he's had a good presence, good vision on the field, good passing, good hold-up play.
Yeah, he's looked dangerous up there.
And, exactly.
And Petrovic has kind of picked up where he left off. I mean, he had one play this last game where he ran to the top of the box and punched it away, but not very far. It was kind of actually almost cost him 3 points, but recovered and it ended up not being a problem. But in general, he's made some outstanding saves under a lot of pressure in a lot of these games.
Yeah. I felt in that one play, it was sort of a moment of frustration where the defense wasn't keeping the ball away from him. He's like, okay, I'm just going to take care of this ball.
Right.
And then misjudged it slightly and had to backtrack.
Sort of made a mess of it.
He's doing everything else.
Right. He made a mess of it, but yeah, you're right. He's been doing everything
right.
Else,
so. I have noticed that Petrovic likes to kick long goal kicks. I noticed it especially in the Nashville game, and maybe it was just to get the ball out of their own half. But I'm curious about that because you know, the trend more now is playing it out of the back, short outlets just to get the ball going. And I feel like at least in the Nashville game, most of those goal kicks didn't turn out so well. So just something I'll keep an eye on as the season progresses.
Yeah, it's worth monitoring. This is a team that played out of the back quite a bit the last few years. So
exactly.
It's a big change. And it'd be interesting to see if they stick with that change or if this is just for specific opponents that they felt like they had to do that. So this is the first year of MLS having exclusive rights to MLS games. And we both have the subscription, and I thought it'd be interesting to get some early feedback. What are some of your thoughts so far?
Well, I think there's some early growing pains, but it's been a little bit of a shift, I have to say, for me. One is just some of the basics I think they're still working on, like the production quality. The audio can be spotty. It can come up and down in terms of volume. It doesn't mix with the stands very well and on the in-stadium action. So it's been a little rough from my perspective.
Yeah, it feels a little canned. Like, I know that this was a worry of ours going into the season, was that without the hometown announcers, but also without a really well-known national crew, you get this sense of almost like, not like watching a video game maybe, but the announcing just feels kind of generic.
Right.
And it feels like they're missing some of that local feel, obviously, of having two commentators who, for all practical purposes, are employed by the team and spend a lot of time during the week with the team, know the players, know the coaches, know the scuttlebutt, know what's happening. That was really missing, I found, in all four of these games.
Yeah, I think I would agree very much with that. I feel like the insightfulness is at a certain level that can be applied to any play and does have that generic feel to it. And it also feels a little bit faceless in a way. Like, you know, with the local broadcasting team, you would often see them in the press box above the field. They're on screen or live on television to start the game and at halftime and post game. With the Apple production, you never see the commentators. Maybe the pregame show, there's a little bit, but the actual broadcasters of the game, are they at the stadium? It doesn't feel like it from how they talk about it, or certainly from the audio mixes, and you never get to see who they are. Like, some of the voices I remember from ESPN or other broadcasts, perhaps from before, or Fox Sports maybe, but I don't remember them. They sound familiar, but it would be nice to be able to know who's talking and where they are and just bring a more direct presence to that.
Right. And to that point about what feels like a less professional broadcast, maybe the halftime has just been a wide shot of the field most games. And I'm not one who misses commercials. I'm happy to miss them, but the first few games was just a wide shot of the field during halftime. I think this past game, there were actually maybe a half a dozen commercials, but then it went back to the wide shot of the field, which was not particularly interesting. And with no audio, it's not like the announcers were talking over it, reviewing stats and highlights and best plays. So that just seems sort of odd, almost like, you know, if you were watching a low-level college or high school game on public access TV, this is Wayne's World, you know? I mean, this is...
Right.
So I don't know if Apple's having trouble selling ads or just didn't resell these games or what's happening, or if the subscriber numbers aren't high enough to warrant that much interest. But it's been a little bit of a rocky start for the Apple broadcast team.
Right.
And not to mention, when you go back and try to watch a whole game, there it's not intuitive where it is in the package, at least on a smart TV. Maybe different on an iPad.
Right. It's taken me a while exactly to find out where you go to look at the whole game versus the highlights. And if you want to switch to the local broadcast, how do you do that? So I've figured it out now by Googling a little bit and seeing where everything is. It is cool to be able to connect to your local broadcasts on home games, and I enjoyed listening to Brad Feldman again. And it, you know, I did feel like there was more relevant narration of the game and just being familiar with the players and pointing out certain things that maybe this other group of commentators, or eventually they'll be more familiar with the teams and be able to talk about it in more depth and something that feels more relevant and not just a generic broadcast.
But to recap, so you're when you say you were able to pair it with a local broadcast, you meant by turning on a radio?
No, so in the MLS, in the Apple TV app, you can actually select the local broadcast
that's good to know.
Yeah, you can select that over the Apple TV broadcast, but only for home games, for the team you're watching.
So
that's nice. Although there's some audio challenges and video challenges there too, because the radio broadcast isn't synced with the TV shots, and so sometimes Apple is showing the field, like you mentioned, without any ads or anything, and at the same time you're hearing Brad Feldman, and this time it was Clyde Sims, I believe, with some background audio with a hot mic, right, because they're waiting for their turn to speak, but they're being caught on audio that's being piped in through the broadcast. And there were some other things too. I mean, we're four games in now, right? And the audio mixes just are still pretty rough. And I think that takes away actually from the game, because you don't actually hear the fans very well. Or it's choppy in and out. At the LAFC game, I noticed that the ball moving across the screen sometimes was choppy. And they also,
interesting. Yeah, because my picture has been sort of inconsistent too.
Uh-huh.
And go ahead.
Yeah, and then their Houston game, which was back at Gillette Stadium, but they had a remembrance for Grant Wall and someone else. I didn't get the name of the person. And what a nice thing to do, right? Grant Wall, a really important figure in terms of soccer in this country, certainly was my kind of hero in journalism around soccer. He was the only one covering soccer in a big way when it still wasn't a big sport here. So it was really nice to see a remembrance at Gillette Stadium for Grant Wall. But the sound coming in through the audio broadcast was just terrible, because they, I guess, were trying to mic the speakers at Gillette Stadium, and it was just ununderstandable. You couldn't understand it. So that was disappointing, in addition to all the other sort of startup issues that they're having. But I'm hopeful. It's nice to have all the games that are, nice to have all the games that you can watch. And you can also watch all the other teams. And there's a much more even schedule. You used to have games at all these different times of the day, and now you have kind of like, the final week. I forget what it's called. The decision day. It's like every Saturday night is decision night, and everyone's playing at the same time pretty much. So there's some benefits perhaps.
Yeah, we'll see how it evolves. It just strikes me as not as smooth a launch as, say, Amazon had with Thursday Night Football, where it felt like, frankly, from what I watched of that, there seemed to be no real difference between watching it on networks, on cable, over the air, versus streaming. But we'll see. Long season, long way to go. And maybe as a final note on this start to the season, which is actually off to a great start for the Revs, despite our trepidation, the inflatable shirt still there, even though
Gillette it's still is there.
A major renovation.
I still have yet to go to a home game. I must admit, sacrilege, but I can't believe that the shirt is still there.
The shirt is still there. I saw it on the last broadcast. They've destroyed about, they've destroyed a bunch of the seats around that entrance as part of a major renovation of the stadium that should be done, I think, by the fall.
I was wondering what's going into those corner seats. That's a lot of seats that aren't available at the moment.
It's a lot of seats, and I don't know if they took them out to put in something structural and then we'll put the seats back, or if there's going to be another field-level restaurant or premium seating or something there, but it's interesting that in that wasteland of a corner of the stadium, the inflatable shirt lives on.
Well, on that note, maybe we should call it a wrap for tonight.
All right. Good stretch of the schedule coming up soon. The Revs play DC United New York City FC and Montreal will be some key games here against Eastern Conference opponents where they look to pick up some points against some teams that are below them in the standings. So we'll be back soon to follow up with more.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone.
We thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warriston and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warriston and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warriston. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution. Last Team on Turf is a production of Row 12 Media.